Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings. Greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we're meant to stay alive. In Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly suggest and even firmly assert we are the higher inner frequency. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class number 691, Anusim on the Rise, part 16. Blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. That's 7.6 billion human beings. With Creator's help, our next broadcast is taking place right now. It's May 27th, 6:31 p.m. Holy Land time, and from Jerusalem, 11:31 a.m. live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unified Soul Actualization, not the United States of Advertising. Program content will feature being a discussion with founder and CEO, and Ezra Nusim, Israeli Amuta, Yafa Batya da Costa, reviewing differences between various groups working with the B'nai Anusim, what the challenges everyone involved in this exciting human movement has and may still be experiencing. And you can learn more about Ezra Nusim by going to their wonderful website at B'nai, B-N-E-I-A-N-O-U-S-I-M.org. And later on in the program, we're going to give you the opportunity, a wonderful opportunity, because it's one of the pillars of the world that we stand upon, mainly the act of tzedakah, an act of righteousness, to help support this worthy organization, and to be zochen to merit to buy delicious, nutritious food from the Holy Land. To participate or merely listen to the program, you can listen, call in at 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. We're listening to a song that goes way, way back in time to about 1960, the theme song from Exodus by Henry Mancini. And I'm going to comment as this music, we're going to segue out and introduce Yafabat Kastia, why I chose this as the segue song to begin today's program. Thank you, Mr. Mancini. May you rest in peace. But before we do, let's welcome in our co-host, Yafabat Kastia. Good afternoon or good early evening, ma'am.
Yes, hi, Dawn. How are you doing?
Baruch Hashem. I just want to broadcast around the world. And by the way, just to mention parenthetically, we got a 40th state in America to join to our listen live or archive versions, which is nice. So we got 10 states to go until we get all 50 states of this United States of America listening in live or the archive versions, and connecting that with 40 countries around the world. And we've got every country in South America except Guyana, a little bit stubborn over there in Guyana. They never tuned in yet. There's one of the countries right next to it, but we're working on them. But we've got Mexico and Central America, Lithuania, we added another country. Nigeria now is listening in. And we have South Korea, and we have we have Australia, and we have New Zealand, you know, most of Western Europe, and Russia still is a
little
bit
stubborn.
Do we
have Philippines?
The Philippines. I would have to go to in the program. I will try to look that up. It's a little bit difficult to do right now as I'm talking to you. But blessed friends, I want to share something with you. Something huge is happening in the world. Something very huge is happening. There seems to be a polarization of who will stand up for Israel and who will continue to stand against Israel, and what, as we as members of the Jewish nation, what are we going to do to participate in this process, not just of, as they call it in Yiddish, hasbara, elucidation, but living the lifestyle, embodying the teachings of the Torah. And I think a wonderful way to learn about implementing and exemplifying the teachings of the Torah are teachings that actually on my Facebook page, I cut and paste a piece of Torah from Rav Moshe Cardavero, although he was born in the holy city of Sfat. He lived from 1522 to 1570. Obviously, his ancestors came from Spain because Cardavero is a Spanish-sounding name. And although, actually, before the program, everybody, I had trouble reconnecting to that piece that you printed. So I'm just going to read actually from the first teaching from chapter 1 of Toma Devorah, which is literally the book of the palm tree of Devorah. Devorah was a shofetis. She was a female judge, and that she would actually, because of her modesty, she would stand behind a tree, and people would come, primarily men, would ask her questions because she was a prophetess. She had Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration.
That's right.
She would guide the nation of Israel. So those who think that a woman can't lead Jewish people, or people in general, a fine example, even before the great Queen Esther, we have here a living, eternal testament that women can lead movements and be effective leaders. So anyway, Rav Moshe Cardavero titled the book this, Toma Devorah, the Palm Tree of Devorah, and he writes the following. It's an elongated paragraph, but it's worth to share, I think, to kick off today's discussion, because it's really a time for we as Jews to stand up and to stand up for those who need our assistance and clarification, better understanding of who we are and what people's roles are in the world. So Rav Moshe Cardavero starts off like this. It is fitting for a human being to resemble human being's creator. It is fitting for a human being to resemble his or her creator, and then he or she will be configured in the secret of the highest form, both in image and likeness. As if he is alike in his body, but not in his actions. So a human being then betrays this divine form, and others will say of him or her, a lovely form, but ugly deeds. As behold, the essence of the highest image and likeness is his actions. And what will benefit him or her to have the structure of his or her limbs like the highest form, but not resemble his or her creator in his or her actions? Therefore, it is fitting that he or she make his or her actions resemble the actions of the crown, which is called Keter, which is which are the 13 highest traits of mercy. And they are hinted to in the verse in the prophet Micah, chapter 7, verses 18. Who is a power like you? He will have mercy upon us. You shall give truth. If so, it is fitting that these 13 traits also be found in man, and of course woman. And now we will explain these 13 actions that will be fitting for those that wish to be fitting. Let me read that again. And now we will explain these 13 actions that are fitting to be with a human being, him or her. And I bring this out, Yafa Batya, and for listeners out there, because this week, as I mentioned, I had an awakening, because I saw the presentation on May 14th with the designation of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. It's something that's been a long time in coming. There's really absolutely nothing controversial about it, because for over 20 years, from President Clinton through President Trump, there has been this movement to move, but knees got shaky and palms started to sweat, and sweat started to come down eyebrows, and then people backed off. But President Trump, and God should bless him for doing this, took the initiative and planted the embassy in the holy city. And it's not just a recognition of the modern state of Israel, which is part and parcel of that presentation, but it's also an affirmation that we of the nation of Israel are rooted in Jerusalem. That is a place that was prophetically designated. It was there that the original human being, Adam, was formed. It was there that Abraham offered up his son Isaac to be sacrificed and told, take him down, as an eternal instruction that human sacrifice in any which way or form, and unfortunately certain theologies have accepted human sacrifice as some way, as a means of deifying a human being to being a god, which we of Israel outright reject. The instruction was, don't offer up human beings as sacrifices. And eventually, King David bought that area from a Canaanite, which is interesting because people have this misunderstanding of the Canaanites. They should be just be destroyed. But if they keep the seven Noahide commandments, King David not only did not kill that Canaanite, he compensated him monetarily with a healthy sum of money to buy that plot of land. And that's,
I would say that's
the one thing that I wish someone, especially the Chabad rabbi who spoke, think that we want. Of course, peace is the objective. It's one of the attributes of Creator. If they had mentioned the peace plan must include the seven Noahide commandments. And now I just want to go back a little bit, and as I told Yafi Bhatti before the program, my aunt, may she be living well, Pesia Bas, Techia Bas, Esther Aliyah Shalom, my grandmother, her mother, my paternal grandmother, once told me that after the Six-Day War, she felt proud to walk in the streets as a Jew in America. But that implies to me that before the 67 War, there was a lack of self-esteem for Jews who were born as Jews in terms of exuding their sense of being Jewish. It's not to preach, but to exemplify it. And with that, the movie Exodus, which came out in 1960 with Paul Newman, was also like an affirmation to wake up Jewish people by Hashkacha Pratis that this is the land that was bequeathed us. Whatever their motivations were, that's one thing. But the point, so the thing is, what I'm trying to bring out, Yafi Bhatti, and to everyone listening, let's think of the Bnei Anusim, trampled upon emotionally, trampled upon economically, trampled upon sociologically, trampled upon anthropologically, trampled upon by being forced to either, so to speak, convert to Christianity or other faiths, or die, or have their children take from them. So we now, who are experiencing this awakening of the fact, a discussion is now taking place in the world, is the land of Israel, and particularly Jerusalem, the inheritance, which we peacefully and pleasantly advocated, is, and amidst all this, people around the world are getting awoken. And today's program is about, Yafi Bhatti talking about, in this process of people being awoken and the Bnei Anusim coming into their, stepping towards their self-actualization, whether they want to become, some of them who have to go through the I don't want to call it traditional, but the option of one type of conversion or a process of reverting, or merely saying we want to keep the seven Noahide commandments. There are different groups getting involved, which are helping, and some are could help more, and then others are undermining, kind of like a fifth column engaging the Bnei Anusim, or causing others to think that the movement, Chas V'Shalom, the Bnei Anusim movement, is actually just a subterfuge for bringing more missionaries to the Holy Land. I put a lot on the platter, Yafi Bhatti, but I'm very inspired by everything that's been going on in the last 2 weeks. I just want to mention one more thing. A week later, in the United States of America, something happened which lifted my heart tremendously. There was a summit on reviewing prison reformation in America. Now, at the time that President Clinton was president, there were 900,000 people in prison in America. By the time he left office in 2000, over 2.6 million people in prison. Prison became a way of lining the pockets of certain people, which I would say is not an honorable way of making money when people are put in prison, perhaps under not prosecuted properly or other factors going on. So I'm saying I connect the fact that America took the bold step under the leadership of President Trump to establish the American embassy in Jerusalem to now revisiting prison reform and actually hearing hardcore conservative Republicans talking about it's for the best interest of the United States of America to educate our prisoners in our system that they don't return to prison because they don't benefit and we don't benefit. And to me, it was like I had to listen to it once and sometimes I had to replay it. I was like, wow, this is a different language. And I think that if you're going to promote that Jerusalem is the center of the universe of the Jewish people, I think Hashem is going to continue to infuse greater wisdoms into the American Republic. That's my own little humble view.
Okay.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I mean, how could I disagree? There's just so much going on in the world. And by the way, I think it has not passed the attention of many people that the movement of the embassy, okay, by President Trump, was done not only on the Gregorian calendar date of the formation of the State of Israel, which was May 14th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but it was after the Jewish celebration of the 70th anniversary of the State of Israel. In other words, it was in the very beginning of the 71st year. We're into a new decade right now.
That's right.
About Israel and about the world and Hashem having his will become more pronounced in the world. In terms of Genesis 12:3, a very, very famous verse. Most people know this verse, Jews, Christians, Noahides, whatever. When God says to Abraham, and this blessing got passed down to Isaac and then to Yaakov, to Jacob, when God says, I will bless those who bless you, and for he who curses you, I will curse.
Mm-hmm.
So the United States did a major blessing for Israel right after the 70th anniversary that we had here in Israel, right? The very next day after Jerusalem Day, but the Yom Ha'atzma'ut, the celebration of the formation of the state, was a few weeks before that. So a few weeks into the 71st year of this country, the United States officially recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which was not done 70 years ago. It's been our capital for 70 years.
Right.
So for 70 years, anybody born, any American, for example, born in Jerusalem, their American passport did not say Jerusalem, Israel. It simply said Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Because according to the U.S. State Department, Jerusalem was disputed territory, quote unquote, right?
Right.
Not by us. The Jewish people have always accepted
right.
Jerusalem as the capital of our nation, goes all the way back 3,000 years that
right.
it was our capital. It's mentioned in the Bible, I don't know how many times, several hundred times. It's not mentioned in the Quran even once. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but I won't. I could rant and rave about that, Dawn.
I hear you.
Such a wonderful thing to be blessed that way. And the United States is going to be blessed by God for having done this.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And now we have Paraguay, who, according to
right.
the Rosh Memshala, the Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, that they now have decided, although originally they did have the embassy there, which I think they moved it out in, I forgot when it was, 2011, 2012, if I'm not mistaken?
I think it was during the Intifada, right.
Okay. And he mentioned that Paraguay has a long history. In the short history, relatively short history of the modern state of Israel, is that during World War II, they were involved in helping Jews escape from the Holocaust, but the Holocaust. It was just it took a hell of a cost from the Jewish people, and so now,
mm-hmm.
73-74 years later, this tiny country, relatively speaking, to the rest of the world, kind of like existing in a very covert manner, has asserted themselves to say, we also shall replant our embassy in Jerusalem. And, you know, I'd like to track how their economy and how their social structure should be blessed, as I do see it coming to America. I won't be surprised when we hear a lot more good news coming from Paraguay after their brave decision, which is a relatively small country, to make that brave decision to plant there, and wise decision. I don't know what's even greater. They're braver, their wisdom, whichever which way, they should be blessed anyway for it, to move their embassy as well to Jerusalem. And hopefully that will empower other small countries to join in the affirmation of that which we of the Jewish people already know to be biblically and rabbinically our natural, ancestral, indigenous capital city.
Right, exactly. And I think President Trump has started a bandwagon And there'll be more countries join this bandwagon, as Bibi Netanyahu, our prime minister, has already stated. I'm sure that he's talking to many other countries. They just have to have the courage of their convictions, okay, and not worry about backlash or negative, you know, feedback or whatever. Because obviously there are people who are against this, who are against Israel in every manner, shape, and form. Shouldn't have to be, but of course it is. And that was also in prophecy that was going to happen. So, and especially a focal point against Jerusalem itself. So, you know, we're living in the days of the fulfillment of prophecy. So that's my segue to talking about the B'nai Anusim, because that's also a matter of prophetic fulfillment of things in the Hebrew prophets. But there are obstacles and barriers, and I believe that the obstacles and barriers exist for a reason in Hashem's plans and purposes. So it's not something that bothers me. It's something that may slow us down at times or delay certain things. But timing is also with Hashem of everything that happens. So I'm fine with all of it, but a lot of people don't understand that we really are up against it. So let me share what some of those things are, and then we can get to that article that you mentioned last month that you wanted to talk about too, John. Okay.
Can I actually one quick parenthetical question about you? Since you are a resident of the Holy City of Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, what is the feeling on the ground as you live your daily life? You know, what is the talk amongst the citizens since the embassy was established in the city that you live in?
Well, you know, I like the famous 80-20 rule, okay?
Okay.
So I think 80% of the population of Jerusalem and Israel as a whole is delighted with what happened with, you know, what President Trump did, what the United States is doing, and all the speeches and all of the dignitaries and stuff talking about the alliance between us and the USA and everything that's been going on, their recognition, for example, that the Palestinians really don't want peace. They're for peace. We're for peace, but they're not. And they've stated that very publicly, that they want to destroy the state of Israel. So, and then I think there's about 20%, and that's rough numbers, you know, that are negative about it, think it could lead to war, think it could lead to other, you know, negative things. These are people, in my opinion, my humble opinion, that don't have very much emunah and bitachon. Emunah is the Hebrew word for faith, and bitachon is the Hebrew word for trust. And I'm talking about faith and trust in Hashem. Okay?
Right.
Like in all of the wars that were fought here, we won those wars because Hashem won them for us.
That's
the belief of observant Jews, or if you want to call us religious or spiritual or whatever people want to call us. But there's so much here, Don, that is very inspiring. And this latest part coming from Chutz La'aretz, coming from outside of the country, of another country, giving us the recognition of what we are. Jerusalem is the capital of the country. You know, they didn't create Jerusalem is the capital. They're just saying they finally agree to recognize it, you know, politically. It was great. Of course, you know, people have a smile on their face going, well, we've known that for 70 years, duh.
right.
You know, but very, very enthusiastic. Most people are very happy, enthusiastic, absolutely.
Beautiful. Okay, so about the groups that have been supporting and sometimes being not as supportive or undermining the efforts of the B'nai Anusim, and I know you're quite acutely aware of these three general categorizations. If you can take us through a walk through this minefield.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't want to talk about groups so much per se.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about individuals. I want to talk about things that people need to be aware of and be cautious about that's going on. Okay? So in one sense, we have a lack of rabbinic support. Okay? We lack rabbis and Torah teachers who do not have their own agenda and will not use this movement of the B'nai Anusim for their own agenda, their own purposes, so to speak, okay, to make a name for themselves or whatever, whatever. We have a lack of rabbis and Torah teachers that do not want to help the B'nai Anusim for money. Very, very few. There are a lot who will help the B'nai Anusim for money, and in some cases, lots of money. Okay, but then they've made it into a business. It's not a mitzvah anymore if you do it for money. Okay, and so it's questionable whether they're doing it l'shem shemayim, for the sake of heaven, for the sake of Hashem, or for their own benefit. That's between them and Hashem. But people need to be careful about that, because there are people who get turned away from some of these teachers and some of these rabbis if they don't have the money that they're being asked for.
Right.
And that is a real shame, okay, that could be happening, and it is happening. There's a lack of rabbis and Torah teachers who will respect B'nai Anusim in terms of their desire to come back as Sephardi. We've got rabbis who claim that the B'nai Anusim should fully convert. Doesn't matter if they have ancestry, doesn't matter if they have evidence of that ancestry, none of that matters. They need to fully convert as if they're a Gentile. Not that there's anything wrong with Gentile conversion, okay? But if these people have the evidences that they could take to Beit Din to be accepted as a returnee instead of as a convert, that option should be available to them. Well, there are rabbis who are totally against that. And furthermore, they not only convert this person to being Jewish, okay, at least that happens, but then they tell them that they're an Ashkenazi Jew now, and they have to observe Ashkenazi custom and tradition. It's outrageous.
That's strange.
These are people who clearly have Spanish and Portuguese lineage, in many cases on both sides of the family, mother and father's side, okay? And yet the rabbis who will work with them, they do. They'll work with them, they'll convert them, and then they tell them they're Ashkenazi Jews, which is totally offensive. It's another thing going on. A lack of rabbis and Torah teachers who will help the B'nai Anusim to not be under suspicion of being messianic infiltrators. Now, the messianic people want to convert Jews to their idolatry, their idolatrous practices. They are heavy duty in South America and all of Latin America, trying to infiltrate into Jewish communities, trying through conversion, through return, through whatever they can do, and then make aliyah, and then come here and do their shtick on the streets of Israel, and especially in Jerusalem, okay?
Right.
And as Tobias Singer, my old friend Tobias Singer, likes to say, they are so committed to this, they'll do whatever they have to do, except one thing, and I'll get to that in a minute. They'll do whatever they have to do to infiltrate and present themselves as a legitimate convert, returnee, or whatever, including the using the B'nai Anusim path for this, because, as Tovia likes to say, they believe the Jewish people are holding up the show, that their Messiah can't return, can't come back, because he was here already, according to them. He can't come back because we're holding up the show until enough regular Jews, born Jews, or converted Jews, converted by halacha, of course, accept him as their Mashiach, okay? So they are absolutely committed to this. Now, the difficulty is, how is one supposed to know the difference between someone who's a ben or a bat anusim, legitimate, coming back, wanting to come back to the faith and traditions of our ancestors, who were Sephardi Jews in Spain and Portugal? How does anyone tell the difference between them and a messianic who's trying to hide under that, you know, visage? Okay.
Cloak,
exactly. Cloak of darkness and evil, for that matter. And my answer to that, and our organization, and our rabbis, and our board of directors for my amutah here in Israel are in 100% agreement. The way to deal with this is to have the people wanting our help, and we have many people asking for our help more and more, Right. Have them sign an affidavit totally renouncing any belief in the Nazarene and all of his names. Total denial of the belief in a man or a human being as God, an object of worship. It's a fairly long document. It needs to be signed and notarized, which means they signed it in front of somebody who they presented to that notary their identification to show who they are. Okay? And I've even got Jewish people against me for doing this as an obstacle. Okay?
Right.
They don't want me doing it. Why would they do, why would they say this? Now, I was on the on my Facebook account all day today responding to this conversation I had with someone last week about it. And he was the one that was so opposed to it. And he was talking, this is on Thursday, before
mm-hmm.
Shabbat, of course, and he was talking to me all about it and saying, oh, see, what's going on in South America, there are allegations that there are certain people who are actually teaching Messianics, teaching them Torah and helping them to convert, return, whatever, knowing that
right.
they're Messianic, knowing
right.
that they want to make Aliyah, okay,
mm-hmm.
under this, you know, under this path that's being offered to the B'nai Amasim, okay? And so then on Shabbat, I'm reading in the Zohar. It's just, it's, you know, Hashem is so good. He really is just incredible. I'm reading the Parsha, the commentary in the Zohar on Parsha Naso, okay? Now, the,
mm-hmm.
the portion in Naso talks about the woman who is suspected by her husband of adultery, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And in the Zohar, in the commentary, I'm going to read it because it's just, it's so incredible. I read this after I had this discussion with this Jewish guy on Thursday, right, where he was opposed
mm-hmm.
to what I'm doing in my organization.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the people that are working with us know they're going to be asked to sign this affidavit, and they're fine with that, right? So here's what it says in the Zohar. Rabbi Elazar adduced here, first he talks about the women that are accused and the process they have to go through, okay, to be judged innocent or guilty and what happens from either of those. And then it goes on to say, Rabbi Elazar adduced here the verse, quote, and when they came to Marah, talking about the B'nai Israel, when they came
mm-hmm.
to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter.
Right.
There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. Now that's in the book of Exodus, chapter 15, verses 23 through 25. I wonder, he said, how is it that people take so little trouble to understand the words of the Torah? Here, for example, we should really inquire, what is the point of the words, quote, there he made for them, dot, 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 and there he proved them. But the inward significance of the water mentioned here is this. The Egyptians claimed, and I put in brackets, alleged, okay,
right,
to be the parents of the children of Israel. And many among the Israelites suspected their wives in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
So the Holy One, blessed be He, brought them to that place at Marah, where He desired to put them to the test. Thus, when Moses cried to the Lord, he was told, write down the divine name, cast it into the water, and let all of them, women and men, be tested, so that no evil report should remain in regard to my children to rest upon them. Straightway, the Lord showed him a tree, and he cast it into the waters, the tree being thus identical with the divine name, the priest has to write for the testing of the wife of an Israelite. Thus, quote, there he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them, unquote. Now it may be asked, this was properly done for the women, but why include the men? But indeed, the men also had to be probed to show that they had not contaminated themselves with Egyptian women, in the same way as the women had to be probed to show that they had kept themselves uncontaminated by Egyptian men all the time they were among them. And all, male and female, were proved to be pure, were found to be the seed of Israel, pure and holy. Okay, and then the Holy One, blessed be He, caused His name to dwell among them. So I wrote about this on my Facebook page, and it's really, really funny because it generated a lot of discussion, which I thought was great, a lot of discussion, fine, and a lot of people commenting on it. But what I wrote at the very end, after I was quoting the Zohar there, what I wrote at the very end, I wrote this: the entire world today is Mitzrayim, is Egypt, and our people are coming out of her and her idolatry. Should we not do something, I mean similar, something similar, to help them show or be proven to be uncontaminated by that idolatry with a simple, signed, and notarized affidavit that we can have on record for them with our organization, Ezra LaNassim? And then I wrote, I think that's a rhetorical question. I mean, obviously I believe that. Because, A, it's true, many messianics are trying to come in and infiltrate, and B, it causes the B'nai HaNassim in some areas to be suspected of being messianic when they're not, which is not fair. Right? So that's what was going on today all day for me.
Well, I mean, I really, you know, we have a teaching in the world of Hasidus that, yes, you know, we had the exile of Egypt followed by Babel and then Persia, or Media, Greek Media, and then now the ancient Edomic Roman exile. But it's all rooted back to the original Mitzrayim. So, yes, I have no problem with that idea. And the whole idea of, and we know that the idea of a document signed has great chashivas, great importance in Jewish law. Now, is this something that Rav Absalom, who is, I believe, your rabbinical mentor or overseer of this movement at the capacity he can, was he presented with this as an idea that should, you know, help clarify the sincerity of those who are in the category of B'nai HaNassim?
Well, no, because he's not working with us anymore. I tried to explain that to you last month.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. He's off doing, you know, his own thing in Brazil. And we have U.S. rabbis who are Sephardi rabbis working with us, constituting a Beit Din who will be sent to South America for our people.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the new news is we have now agreed between us and the emerging community in Monterrey, Mexico, and between us and the emerging community in Honduras that we are going to work with them. They're going to be having our help and support in three areas. And this is the three areas that Ezra HaNassim is designed to do. Okay, one is to help them acquire their halakhic status as Jews, but we're going to use the Beit Din from the United States. Two, to help them make Aliyah for those who want to make Aliyah to Israel, which I think many, if not most of them, do. And three, to help them with absorption issues once they get here to Israel. Absorption issues are things like helping them to find a place to live, helping them to find employment, helping them to connect into networks where they can make friends with other people. Okay, those are the three areas that Ezra HaNassim wants to do for the B'nai HaNassim, similar to what Nefesh B'Nefesh does for Jews in North America, U.S. and Canada, and I think they also help U.K. Jews now, but they don't do the first part. They don't need to help people acquire halakhic status as a Jew. These are people who are already Jews, okay?
But they
do those second two things. They help them make Aliyah. They helped me, okay? They help them to make Aliyah, and if it was a B'nai HaNassim from U.S., Canada, U.K., they would help them as well. Okay, so they help them make Aliyah, and they help them with all these absorption issues, but they do not help people in Mexico, Central America, South America, Australia, New Zealand, Philippines, and Indonesia. This is where the majority of the B'nai HaNassim are. And I went to them, and I asked them for their help. This was many years ago, and they declined, okay, because they were focused on U.S. It was the board of directors that actually declined because they're focused on U.S. and Canada and U.K., and they have limited funds, okay? And by the way, that's what I'm going to get to next, is talking about fundraising. But let me finish with the other obstacle barriers. We have a lack of rabbis and Torah teachers who support the option of Gir Lachomra, which is ceremonial or symbolic conversion, okay? And
right.
Like what I went through. And these people go into the mikvah, bli bracha. They don't say the bracha of the convert. They say only Shekianu, okay? And lastly,
right.
We have a lack of high-level rabbinic haskama or endorsement. Now, all of these things we're working on, Don. I don't want people to think, oh, I'm just complaining and talking about everything that's in our way of helping the B'nai Anusim. I'm not complaining. I'm being very candid and realistic about what are some of the obstacles and barriers, but we're working in all of these areas to break these barriers down or to go around the obstacle or under it or over it or whatever. Okay. Then we have other things that are lacking. We lack financial support. There are quite a few reasons for this. One, the B'nai Anusim are not exotic enough. You know, there's a preference for B'nai Menashe and the Ethiopians and other lost tribes, okay?
Right.
But people don't understand. The B'nai Anusim coming to Israel as Jews could be a huge boom to the Israeli economy as well as the fulfillment of prophecy. But actually, a fulfillment of prophecy is kind of also problematic because if people are afraid of prophecy, or if they're afraid that maybe we really are living at the end of days, you know, then people
right.
are scared of that. And the prophecy about the B'nai Anusim, as I've mentioned many times on the show, Don, but I'll say it again, is with the prophet Obadiah 1:20 that says, and the exiles from Yerushalayim at Sepharad will inherit the cities of the Negev. And, of course, Sepharad is
right.
Spain and Portugal. Okay. In other cases, we have a lack of funding support because this arena is considered too controversial. You know, about how to bring back the B'nai Anusim. And then we've got, again, this whole question of, are they messianic infiltrators? I think I have the answer for that. But there are people who, you know, wouldn't support or fund our work because they think, well, maybe we're helping messianics, okay? And the
yeah.
third major area of lack or barriers and obstacles is government of Israel supporting this whole movement. Only recently, in October of 2015, did the Knesset have a caucus about the Anusim. And then more recently in March, and we go back to that news report that you mentioned last month, in March of 2018, there was an announcement of the Ministry of Diaspora Affairs to look into all of these various groups that have some kind of connection to Jews or to Judaism, and the B'nai Anusim were mentioned, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But again, there seems to be a lack of commitment to bringing in as many as potentially 5 million of these B'nai Anusim. That's my estimation as to how many could come in. The Ministry of Interior has traditionally not wanted to reframe the rules for converts to accommodate
right.
the realities of Latin America. And what's that reality? That is that the majority of the Jewish communities there in Latin America will not accept B'nai Anusim converts or returnees due to a takana that was established in 1927. And lastly, now I'll get into your questions, John. Lastly, in Perkei Avot, it says, to say little and do much. But the
right.
reality here in Israel is that there are many, many people who are saying much and doing little. So it's
mm-hmm.
an actual fact, more hype and not much substance. That's just the reality. And we're working on all of this as well.
Right, right. That's it's very painful. But, you know, I saw something over the weekend that there was a book that was submitted once to Lubavitch Rebbe on the history of aviation aeronautics. And there's a principle in aerodynamics that the force which is going to hold the plane down will actually contribute to its ability to thrust forward and elevate itself. So hopefully this resistance or this apathy or this lack of empathy or this skullduggery in the forms of the messianics trying to infiltrate the movement will serve to give the movement the proper liftoff that it so sorely needs and, in my opinion, my humble opinion, is deserving of. Because, again, we just have to go back. The history of our people, everybody, and for those listening out there, started out, our ancestors were idolaters. And this is something that we testify every year at our Pesach celebration, where Yeshua ben Nun, who was the prophet, the leader, took over from Moses, said, our ancestors on the other side of the river were idolaters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that really in my infant stage of Judaic lifestyle, Torah lifestyle, Judaism, whatever you want to call it, that cemented in my idea that if they're willing, you know, here is the prophet of God saying, guys, this is where we started. So anyone who wants to hook on or reconnect or convert or revert, whatever you want to say, we have to have our hearts open to listen to what they are trying to communicate. We have to have very attentive listening skills.
Right. Yeah, and our ancestors were idolaters, that's true. And in the case of the banana scene, you know, our people had to hide in Christian countries. They led a double life, you know, like some of these spies out there, you know,
right,
who live one life in the public domain, okay, working and having a family and doing all of what they do, and then privately and secretly they're a spy and they're collecting data and doing all of what they do there. So it was a double life for our ancestors. And in the meantime, they passed down a lot of customs and traditions of Judaism, mainly by the women, not just by the women, but mainly by the women, because it was things related to food and cooking and what kind of food was prepared and how it was prepared, and a lot of things about the home, which could be done in private, you know. So
right,
it wasn't so much the women were so much better than men. It was just that they were passing down things to their daughters and even in some cases to their sons, you know, about Jewish custom and tradition because it could be done. It was done in private.
Right.
So, yeah, I just think it's really horrible that people are so much, some people, again, not a lot, most people are apathetic and indifferent, Don, which is a sad tale in itself, okay? They don't even want to spend any amount of time. You know, charity and tzedakah is not just about money. It could be about
right,
time, spending time like you do, you know, and having me talking about this on your show, for example. There's so many things that people could do to help us, to help the B'nai Anusim. And there's many things that B'nai Anusim could do and are doing, many of them, to help themselves, okay? That's not happening because so many people are apathetic and indifferent. Then we have the minority of people, the naysayers, the attackers, the people that say, no, that's not going to work, no, this isn't going
right,
to work, and just tear it down what we're trying to do without having an answer on their own, like Abbas, okay, this man who's the head of the Palestinian Authority here, three times the Prime Minister of Israel offered a package for peace. And it was not only rejected, okay, he didn't come back with a counteroffer. That's what you're supposed to do when you negotiate. You say, well, I don't like
right,
that offer, but let me present, you know, my view of what would be a fair offer. He doesn't even come back with a counteroffer. So a lot of the people who are attacking me personally, my organization, okay, and the work that's being done to help the B'nai Anusim, they attack what we're doing, but they don't come back with a counteroffer. You know, it would be better if you did X, Y, or Z, or a solution that would solve the problem or the barriers and obstacles that I'm trying to deal with would solve it, but in a different way than the way I'm doing it. I would be open to listening to that, okay? But they
right,
just
right,
attack
right,
what we're doing without any offer or suggestion of what would work better or be, you know. So it's not only not helpful, it's destructive. Now, of course, I don't let it stop me, Baruch Hashem. I've got many Sephardi rabbis behind what we're doing. We have a board of directors that are fully, behind what we do. All of this, by the way, is very public, my position. I'm fiercely supportive of the B'nai Anusim. I come from this ancestry, but I'm fiercely supportive of the B'nai Israel all over the world, and especially in this country. Yes. And I'm especially supportive of the laws here, immigration law that says if a Jew, born a Jew or converted, has accepted a different faith, a different religion, they do not qualify for Aliyah under the laws, the immigration laws of this country. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do anything. As a matter of fact, I'll do everything in my power to prevent any Messianic, who are really Christians in their belief system, any Messianics from coming in and infiltrating into this country to do their shtick here through my organization and what we're doing to help the B'nai Muslim, and I'm being attacked for it. Now, I don't care about the attack. Let them attack. You know, Hashem sees everything. Hashem hears every word that everyone says. And he's their judge. Not me. I'm just going to go along and do my business and ignore them, you know. But it's just amazing what's going on.
I would like to offer. Now, I have to admit, before there was the, you know, the, I'm going to publicly say this because I'm a little bit pained by it. If you remember, I think it was in late March, before there would be the B'nai Anusim rallies around the world, there was a contingent in New York City, and I got a link, and I sent them a link that I'd like to participate, I'd like to come down, maybe meet people, and talk, and they never responded, which I don't know, maybe they were suspect of me of some sort of chicanery. I don't know, but I'm now publicly going on the radio, Yaffe Batta, to offer. Although I'm not a rabbi, I am qualified to share teachings in Torah, and I am encouraged by my Rabbonim going from the Brooklyn area all the way to Eretz Israel, which I have Rabbonim in Eretz Israel, and I have Rabbonim here in the Brooklyn who are supportive of my efforts, that I'm making an open appeal. If there are members of B'nai Anusim that are living in the New York City area, I'd be willing to take one night a week for anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour, and there might be a Q&A afterwards, to start a class, whether meeting in person. I would prefer in person. There's nothing like in person. Like, I know that people do telephone therapy. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like face-to-face therapy. And I'm willing to offer my services as part of this movement to empower people, because I'm living in Brooklyn for those. So if you know of anyone listening out there, be interested, I'm going to give my cell number now. And I'm going to give my website, my email. So my cell number is 718-753-4683, 718-756-4683. Anyone listening out there? And it could be starting that maybe someone who's out in California wants to learn. Okay, we can start one-on-one over the telephone. Or maybe we can do something. I'm not so versed. I have to learn more how to get a better feel of Google Hangouts to do a class. But that's because I do feel strongly that this is part of the redemption process of B'nai Yisrael, children of Israel. So I'm just throwing that aside from our once-a-month class presentations. I also want to mention that there is a wonderful way to support Ezra Lanusim, Israeli Amuta. There is a website called www.artisan.com/ref/ANOUSIM, and I think there's another forward slash, and there you have a potpourri, you have a smorgasbord of products to purchase, and they have committed to giving a certain percentage of their sales by those who will connect by acknowledging that they, you know, want to buy their products. And Artisan, because you're typing in Anusim, will give a certain percentage of profit to Yaffe Batya's organization, which I think is definitely worthy of not just support within Israel, but from the four corners of the globe.
Well, thank you so much, Don, for reminding people about that. That link is also on our webpage, on our website, I should say, and people can write to me on the website, through the website. There's a button called Contact Us on the website. People write to me all the time, also on Facebook, on my organization page, Ezra La'anusim. If people want our help in coming back to the faith and traditions of their ancestors, of Spain and Portugal, I'm talking about the Jewish people of Spain and Portugal, they can go to our website, fill out the questionnaire, which is how they register with us for our help mm-hmm. and support. Or they can simply click on the Contact Us button. An email will be sent to us and someone will be assigned to, you know, respond to them and contact them and talk to them about what they, you know, are interested in. So the website again is www.BNEIAnousim.org. And I know you have this on your page, Don, your Facebook page all the time. You have our website there. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate your support, Don. And the only reason why I mention all these obstacles and barriers is so that people can, first of all, understand what we're up against. Second of all, decide if they want to do anything about it. Even prayer. Even to pray for this movement and to pray for our people and pray for this organization, Israel Anusim, that Hashem continue to bless us, which He has been over the past 2 years now. This is our third year doing pro-Israel rallies. So He is blessing us, but that blessing would be increased even more. So people can even just pray about this and talk to Hashem about it, about these situations and what we're dealing with. I mean, there's so many different ways to help the organization or the people who are the B'nai Anusim. There's so much that could be done where people do not have to be apathetic or indifferent and just go about their lives and, you know, listen to the show and then forget all about it. There's many, many ways to be helpful and, of course, to be helped if they do have this ancestry and want to make a full coming back to the faith and traditions of our ancestors.
Thank you, Yafi Batikaste. I'd like to thank you for sharing with us one of your most valuable resources, your precious time. And that basically ends today's presentation. I think it was a very real, down-to-earth presentation. Nothing Pollyannish about Yafi Bate's views, and I will humbly assert that I don't think I was in the category of being PA either, Pollyannish, because we're talking about you know, real life, and I do think we have to capitalize. And everything happens by Shkocha Pros, Divine Providence. And the fact that the U.S. Embassy now is in Jerusalem, and now the Paraguay Embassy is—if they didn't move it, did they move in officially yet, Fibatio, or they're going to move, say, in this week? Please clarify for me.
I think it's pretty soon, but I don't remember the actual date.
Okay, so we have to capitalize on these moments, but so this is an Eis Ratzon, a favorable time for the arousal of the Jewish nation to become aroused about embracing all members of our nation, even though there's like certain impediments to all members of our nation reconnecting. You know, there's a prophecy that there will be just left a stump of Jesse, right? You know, the messianic, the longing for the true Mashiach that we believe in will be so reduced in, so to speak, its overt manifestations. The prophet Isaiah talks about this. It will just be like a stump left, and yet a branch will grow out, and from there will blossom out the redemption, you know, through the ages of Mashiach Tzidkenu, our righteous Messiah. So right now, you know, people have been trying to put the axe to the movement of B'nai Anusim, but no, a branch is growing, blessed souls. And we're going to end off with today's program with Help Me Find My Way Back Home by our brother David Dom from Jolly Old England. And one of the ways we can help ourselves find our way back home is by helping others find their way back home and hopefully be in a way of Ahavachad, one love, Gorlachad, one destiny, Kolon of Olz, Bedarchenim, Darki, Shalom, in a pleasant and peaceful way. And I have to remind everyone, because it's my responsibility to do so, and I've been encouraged by my mentors and teachers, my rabbis, we've got to be good, I've got to be good, Yafi Batit's got to be good, whoever's listening right now will hear in the archive version, we've all got to be good, because at Tevatov, Lehetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good. Creator, the source of our goodness is patiently and most mercifully waiting for us to activate that goodness to help each one of us help find a way back home to our holy land with all the tribes of Israel, communicating, collaborating with all the families of the earth. Forget about this human race title. We are the families of the earth that must come together. Help Me Find My Way Back Home by David Dom. Take care, everyone.
Arrange my world, take up my plea.